This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good evening, it's the evening edition. You're with Caroline and Ezra, and if you missed any of your legal studies class, you're in for a treat tonight.
Yes, you are.
In the beginning of April this year, Minister in the Prime Minister's Department, Nancy Shukri, announced that the Permanent Coroner's Court will begin proceedings from April 15th with one coroner in place for each state to hold inquiries into custodial and other unexplained death cases.
Yeah, the announcement of the Permanent Coroner's Court by the government, however, was made without enacting a comprehensive Coroner's Act, which would guide these court proceedings. Instead, it's been put forth that it'll be guided by provision under the Criminal Procedure Code, the CPC.
To discuss this matter further and help us understand the functions and role of the Coroner's Court in tackling custodial deaths are Stephen Thiru, Vice President of the Malaysian Bar Council, as well as Roger Chan, Deputy Chair, Human Rights Committee, Malaysian Bar Council. Welcome to the show.
Hi.
Hi.
Don't be too enthusiastic. Now, before we get into the issue of the coroner's court, let's set the background a little bit about the issue of custodial deaths and how important that is in the Malaysian context.
Okay. I think it was not too long ago we were here talking about custodial deaths, and I'm afraid the statistics have not improved. The last time when we spoke, we talked in terms of one police custodial death per month, going back to the year 2000, and we had a figure of 156 persons up till February 2011, and then we had six more deaths in 2012. 2013 was 12 deaths last year, and so far we've, I think in 2014 we've got another six deaths.
So we're averaging on one a month.
Easily one a month.
Still, yeah.
Right?
Okay.
And I think you'll also remember sometime last year when we had that case of the late Damindran. That's quite an awful case.
And that was a high-profile case that I guess caught the attention of the media as well.
Yes, and we came out with a very strong statement at the time. The police responded by saying that they were going to set up a special committee to take measures to prevent deaths in police lockups, you know, to make sure there's frequent visits by doctors and by the Human Rights Commission and so on. I don't think that has happened. We have not heard anything about that. Roger, I don't think we've heard anything about that.
No, not that I know of. No updates, no development.
Now, when we talk about custodial deaths, I mean, you know, in Malaysia's history, or perhaps, you know, can we compare it to the region or in other parts of the world? How common or uncommon is this particular issue? And do other countries are perhaps more better at addressing such an issue?
Can't really say. I don't think we have done a comparative study there, but I think the figures that we have are by any stretch dire figures. You know, to have one person die in custody every month, I dare say, is quite unparalleled in a modern civilized world, in any civilized jurisdiction.
Yeah, well, one is one too many.
Yes, one is one too many.
And what are some of the reasons to why this happens so much? I mean, can we ascertain as to what that reason is?
No, I don't think there is any strong empirical or any other sort of evidence to suggest why. And that's why I think it's important that we've come up with the suggestion to have the IPCMC, which is really something that came out after the Royal Commission in 2005.
The IPCMC being the Independent Police Commission.
Police Commission as an oversight body into the conduct of the police. That will ensure transparency. And with that, we'll unearth grounds and reasons as to why these things happen. Unfortunately, that also has not taken place. The police have resisted that. In its place, we've got this EAIC, which really, in terms of its efficacy, leaves much to be desired. Now we've also moved, the bar has moved, and civil society has moved for a coroner's court in the shape that a coroner's court takes in other jurisdictions, a very specialized court. What we've had in the past is just inquest done by magistrates, and that again has left much to be desired. So the government recently, as you mentioned just now, has set up what it calls a special coroner's court. Unfortunately, it falls way short of the requirements of what one would want in a coroner's court.
Okay, well, tell us, before we get into what one would want, what is the current shape and form of the coroner's court, and what's the function of it?
The current change actually is not much of a change. You can call it a coroner's court, but substantially you need to address the features that accompanies the labor. Presently, the laws have not changed. In other words, we don't have a Coroner's Act. There's no ordinance relating to the setup of a coroner's court. We don't have a new law providing for that. So the old law is still in place. All that has been done is to appoint senior judges to replace the existing magistrates who sits as coroners in the present setup. So it's a change of labor rather than very substantive changes on the way and to be implemented.
So I guess you would want someone a bit more specialized in their field to be in these positions, is that right?
Precisely. But whether they are actually specialized or experienced in this field is something left to be seen. Now, the Coroner's Court was set up on April 15. And it is too early, I think, to make any conclusion or pass a comment. Mm-hmm. Because we do not really know the actual training or the background training that these judges who act as coroners have taken or undergone. And it is premature to make a comment now. But what we can comment now is the features of coroner's courts from a number of jurisdictions has not been taken into consideration, has not been put in place so as to improve upon the system. And one of the very important features in which the coroner's court can very function very effectively would be a more proactive role in terms of investigation. And if the coroner plays a more proactive role, then he supervises investigation by the police. And this is very important because all this while, you have investigation by the police when the police themselves, they are the people complained against.
Right. And so there's no oversight.
Yes.
We're speaking to Stephen Thiru as well as Roger Chan about the coroner's court in addressing the issue of custodial deaths. We'll be right back on the evening edition on BFM 89.9. Good evening, it's the evening edition. You're with Caroline and Ezra, and we're speaking to Stephen Thiru, Vice President of the Malaysian Bar Council, as well as Roger Chan, Deputy Chair, Human Rights Committee of the Malaysian Bar Council. And of course, we're speaking about the coroner's court, and of course, in addressing the issue of custodial deaths.
That's right. So, you know, just help us ascertain, how were death investigations, rather, conducted previously, and how does it compare with the new system?
Previously, there is no actual real change in terms of police investigation. They were just investigate a death in custody by relying on the provisions of the Criminal Procedure Code.
Right.
So we have a very anomalous situation. Okay, oversight is one thing. Mm-hmm. The other thing is there's an element of bias, because if you are complained against and you are investigating a complaint against somebody who complained against you,
yes,
so it doesn't make sense in the first place. Mm-hmm. So that means you need to have some independent body to look into the investigation. And investigation must be transparent, and also it must have the confidence of the public in regards to the process. And that is why the IPCMC would be the best mechanism to play this role.
Stephen, for folks who may not be familiar, what's wrong with investigating a custodial death through the Criminal Procedure Code, or what's lacking in that regard? Okay.
Before I go to that, in announcing the implementation of what they call the Mahkamah Khas Coroner, the Special Coroner's Court, which is to take effect from the 15th of April, there was also a practice direction that was issued. That practice direction actually tells you about the many steps that you need to take in the investigation process, in the inquest. It's a fairly detailed practice direction. We do not know how much of this is actually being utilized because, as you know, it's literally just out of the oven, hot out of the oven. So it's a good step. It's a good step. At least there is some guidelines now as to how the inquest has to be done. But what's lacking in this, and this is, I think, the major criticism that we have in terms of the new setup, forensic expertise. Forensic expertise is critical to the coroner's court setup in almost all jurisdictions, if not all jurisdictions.
Can you explain to us why?
Because in the subject matter that you're dealing with, the deaths of persons in custody, you cannot just have general medical officers looking at it. You need forensic pathologists, and these are the proper experts who would look into the many reasons as to why this has occurred. And these people are not used in the present system. They are completely out of the system. And as I said, it is a practice that you have in other jurisdictions, whether it's a pathologist or, better still, a forensic pathologist who is part and parcel of the entire inquiry process. So you really get to the bottom of the matter as to why this has happened. It is not just any post-mortem that is to be done. There is obviously a great suspicion as to why this has happened. And it's obviously a complex matter, and that's why in other jurisdictions they've sought to use pathologists or forensic pathologists.
With regards to the implementation of this new coroner's court, was the Malaysian Bar Council consulted in any way?
No, I don't think we were. We actually did prepare a memorandum. There's a memorandum which has a comparative study of how coroner's courts were set up in different jurisdictions. I believe it's Singapore, New Zealand, and so on. That memorandum was given to the government. That, if you call that consultation, it was given to the government, but we didn't really have a discussion as to how it should take. And what we see now, what has come about, is simply an upgrading, if you like, of the present inquest system. So you move it away from a magistrate, you put it before a sessions court judge. You have these practice directions, as I said, laudable on paper, mm-hmm. because it does give you some guidelines. Mm-hmm. But how far it goes, bearing in mind, we've had many cases before. Death in police custody under the CPC requires a mandatory inquest. We know we didn't have a mandatory inquest in many, many of those cases. We have the numbers. So again, whether or not they follow these guidelines, we do not know. But I come back to the main bone of contention we have, and which is a center point of the memorandum that we put to the government, the requirement for forensic expertise in terms of pathologists. Now, that's absent in the system. It's completely absent. Bear in mind, the approach taken in other jurisdictions is to have the coroner's court set apart from the normal court system. So you do not have an inquest, if you like, being one of the matters that come up in court.
And the rationale behind that, I guess it's for independence, but could you elaborate a little bit
more? More than that, it has to be expeditiously resolved. You have a case like this of somebody having died in police custody, and there's so much publicity about it. You can't have something like this resolved 4 or 5 years down the road, if at all it gets resolved. It's a matter of public interest. Members of the public want to know what has happened. So it requires expeditious settlement of the matter. I think under the present guidelines is nine months, is it?
It's 9 months. Now, previously, there was no guidelines, and there are a number of drawbacks. When inquests are held by the normal magistrate, he has the normal course of the day business to ensure that these are being taken care of. He has cases to handle. And inquests are meant to be special proceedings, which means you have to give priority.
Sure.
But from a practical standpoint, it does not happen that way, because the magistrate is so busy with the work of the day that instead of putting the inquest as the first item of the business of the day, normally he will stand down the cases and the case will come up in the afternoon. And later on, it could be postponed, and this may take quite a number of years. And this is one of the main problem. But for the present setup, you are given 9 months. Okay, you got to handle it expeditiously. You got to take into account the expert views, things like that. So there's improvement in that sense.
Right. So understanding the ins and outs as you do, in your opinion, what are the barriers to installing this sort of expertise? Is it logistics? Is it cost? What do you think?
The expertise. Now, I think we have to be very clear about certain things like GMOs. It means general medical officers. Now, you need an expert forensic pathologist who should be full-time into this field. And I think the medical profession can do a lot to help the lawyers, the prosecutors,
yes,
and the coroners in this respect. And it will make their job easier because it's supposed to be fact-finding proceedings.
We're speaking to Stephen Thiru as well as Roger Chan from the Malaysian Bar Council, speaking about the coroner's court in response to the issue of custodial deaths. We'll be right back on BFM 89.9. Good evening, I'm Ezra Zayed.
Good evening, I'm Caroline Oh.
And this evening we're speaking about the coroner's court in response to the issue of custodial deaths. With us is Stephen Thiru, Vice President of the Malaysian Bar Council, as well as Roger Chan, Deputy Chair, Human Rights Committee of the Malaysian Bar Council. Earlier, I guess we were speaking about some of the shortcomings with regards to the implementation of this new coroner's court, and there are a lot of question marks as to how comprehensive this effort is. Can we talk about some of the ideal scenarios that we would like to see and perhaps what we can learn from other jurisdictions with regards to this issue?
Okay. In our memorandum to the government, and this is a memorandum the government sought from us in terms of the coroner's court.
In your recommendations.
Yes.
Right.
Number of critical features. One of it is this. We said that you need a clearly stated objective for the act itself. It should focus on identifying the deceased person, ascertaining the how, when, and where the person died, first point. Secondly, the creation of an official position of state coroner and coroners, something you see in other jurisdictions. You could have that person appointed by the Prime Minister on the recommendation of the Chief Justice. The state coroner must be a person with minimum at least a sessions court judge or a more senior position than that of what we currently have, magistrate.
And tell us, what is the significance of, you know, having a state coroner?
Well, it's state by state. We have different states, and you can't have one person because obviously there are these many cases now, this preponderance of cases, and we don't want a backlog of these cases. So as and when a custodial death does happen in a particular state, then you'd have a state coroner who can act on it straight away.
And the significance of it being a minimum sessions court judge?
Yes, a minimum sessions court judge for expertise, because you know, you want somebody who has some sort of or sufficient experience within the judiciary itself,
right,
at that level to look at it, as opposed to a magistrate.
Sure.
All right. And then we want coroners who are specifically trained and responsible for, as I think Roger mentioned just now, supervising the investigations by the police, ensuring all relevant evidence is gathered, presiding over the inquiry, and making findings. So a very hands-on coroner. Which again is going to be a very difficult position to take if it's just an any day, everyday sessions court judge who would have a whole
backlog,
a table full of cases to handle, can't give enough focus to this important area. Then, and the last feature that we mentioned in our memorandum to the government is the specific use of pathologists and forensic pathologists. And these pathologists or medical practitioners must be supervised. If it's just a medical practitioner, if you do not have pathologists, then they must be supervised by pathologists. And so these are four of the critical features that we wanted included in the setup of the coroner's court, but we don't see that. We don't really see that in this proposal by the government at the moment.
And why do you think that's the case? Because clearly, I mean, from the four critical features that you were mentioning, it all relatively makes sense. But is it the issue of personnel that we don't have the experience and the expertise? Is it the issue that, you know, that the current scenario might actually be more helpful towards expediting some of these issues?
I think we need to be serious about the action that we take to address the problem. We cannot have hard-hearted measures or lame effort when it comes to custodial death. So I think this is why I would say that it is important to take into consideration all these sort of factors, a very comprehensive approach. And one of the problems that we need to address, very important, I would like to add that to what Stephen has said just now, is the erasure and also the tempering of evidence. Because sometimes evidence can just disappear if we are not able to intervene in time, mm-hmm. in just a flash of a second or a few minutes. That's why we talk about expeditiousness, transparency, and this is what the whole system is aimed at, fact-finding. So the other level of expertise would be a very experienced judge who is able to play a more direct role, go into the police station, summons the witnesses, take all the relevant evidence, and in this way, the chain of evidence will not be easily broken and be tempered with.
So in your opinion, does the current incarnation appear to be cursory?
Well, it's insufficient, certainly insufficient, simply because I think we are dealing with an area that has waxed us now for, what, 14 years, 2000? If you are going back to the year 2000, and the statistics are horrible, leave from the macabre, to have so many people die, and many unanswered questions. I think we need more than what we have at the moment, an upgrading, a bit of a retrofit of what we have at the moment is not enough.
But I guess when we're talking about the issue of custodial deaths, some of those high-profile incidents and cases appear every 4, 6, 8 months, and suddenly everybody cares about it. At least the public are up in arms about it. Do you think if there was greater public awareness, or will that add pressure towards implementing something more comprehensive?
Definitely. In fact, the bar has been playing a very vital role in this respect. If you look at the issues of death in police custody, the bar has taken leadership, more than 10 years back, and they were first to intervene. And in fact, the IPCMC campaign is not something new. The bar has taken on in many forums and disseminated the idea why an oversight independent mechanism is very important. And these are the social responsibility that the bar hope that the rest of the civil society party, the organization and all that will come to play a much bigger role to complement it. And in that sense, it will be a role that will be more effective in respect of public perception.
We were speaking earlier about the Enforcement Agency Integrity Commission, the EAIC, was put in place to look into enhancing the operations and management of the police. I think it was set up about April 2011. But of course, it's died down in terms of its significance and its role. What is the status of the EAIC when it comes to handling custodial death cases?
I think it compares rather poorly with the IPCMC in terms of its efficacy. There are a number of features in it which, if you look at the recommendations made by the Royal Commission in 2005, and there were, I think, 126 recommendations by the Royal Commission, the EAIC falls way short of that.
Mm. In what areas specifically can you highlight what's most alarming to you?
Well, let's look at just the end result. Once the EAIC does investigate, and its investigative powers, its resources are very limited. I think they've got probably one person there who is doing everything for them. At the end of the day, all it does, it recommends to the authority, let's say the police, that it's found these things. And it's entirely up to the police whether it's going to the police wants to take any action on it.
Toothless.
The IPCMC is different. It has the teeth that you require, because it can take action after investigation and prosecution on the person involved, and that's what we wanted, something out of the agency itself, an independent body to look at it as an oversight, to look into these matters.
The IPMC actually reflects the people's expectation, and this is reflected in the setting up of a Royal Commission. That was exactly the purpose why this commission was set up, to get the inputs and feel of the people. So they came up with this mechanism. So that is people's expectations. But the government, instead of implementing the IPCMC, introduced the EAIC, which is not exactly what the people want. So it is exactly something very different from what the Royal Commission has proposed.
So when we speak about the IPCMC, the Independent Police Complaints and Misconduct Commission, what is the rhetoric against the establishment of it? Because clearly it sounds, you know, something quite necessary, you know, in the context of all of the cases that have been happening in the past decade or 14 years.
Well, I believe the police have been against it because they feel that you can't have an outside body investigate them. They've always taken the position that they do it best themselves internally. Unfortunately, given the figures that are stacking up, that argument on their side doesn't hold much water. Experience will tell you that you need to have an independent oversight committee, which is outside, independent obviously, outside the agency itself, to be effective. So you're not going to face, for example, the blue wall of silence. All right?
And what is this blue wall of silence for those who may not be familiar?
It's basically, I don't tell on you, you know, and we'll protect each other.
So don't ask, don't tell almost.
Yes, right? So we create this, we erect this wall of silence, you know, and it makes it very difficult because you may actually have very good people and you do have very good people within the police force, and because of this unwritten, unarticulated code, as it were, that you have, they are not able to come forward within the organization itself without facing some form of repercussion.
It creates a culture in itself.
Yes, a difficult culture for people who want to come forward and do the right thing. So if you have an independent organization which would have the power to compel, and you'd have then to come and give evidence under compulsion, subpoena if you like, then it's a very different scenario altogether, right? So it actually works, in our view, not only to the advantage of public, as Roger said, public interest, it actually works in favour of even the organisation because it creates transparency. So the organisation, the police should not fear the IPCMC. There's no reason to fear it, because if there are enough good people within the police force, then the IPCMC would be there to weed out the bad heads, all right, and enhance the standing and the credibility of the police in the eyes of the public.
And moving forward with regards to the coroner's court, what can we expect moving forward? Because clearly there's some discontent as to the current status of the implementation. Can we expect more dialogue and discussion between the Bar Council and the government, or is there any discussion?
This is a done deal.
Is this it?
Yeah, I think we can do a lot more by taking on extensive research, at least for the moment, to take all the good points, the features from a number of countries which have coroner's courts. Our neighbour Singapore, for example, they have the Coroner's Act, and some of the interesting features could be considered and applied in our system. For example, in Singapore, the coroner is given the power to have regard to questions that are pertinent to the death and also to the proceedings at the inquest. And some of the important questions are provided for by law. For example, he needs to address himself whether that appears to have been due to action or inaction of any other person. That is the first primary principle. Then he is empowered to address the extent, and this is important, to which the drawing of attention, the attention of the public, to circumstances of death may likely reduce the chances of occurrence of other deaths in similar circumstances, which means that the coroner's court in Singapore is also proactive in the way that it thinks about possible occurrences in future under similar circumstances. So it also plays the role indirectly of institutions like IPCMC. They are preventive. Of course, coroner's courts is there. It's after the event. Somebody have died. You can. There's nothing you can do about it. But still, you see the function that the coroners in Singapore play is both preventive and also proactive. No. And New Zealand also have similar features, and also Hong Kong, UK, and all that. So I think we need a comprehensive study and approach. We need to marshal all these features, study them and introduce them. And I think that would be the first step forward.
And from what it sounds like, it doesn't require reinventing the wheel.
No, absolutely. Yes. Certainly, thank you very much, gentlemen, for highlighting some of the main issues about the coroner's court in response to the rising number of custodial deaths in the country. We've been speaking to Stephen Theroux, Vice President of the Malaysian Bar Council, as well as Roger Chan, Deputy Chair, Human Rights Committee of the Malaysian Bar Council. Stay tuned to the evening edition on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.